Seems to me that already there are kind of unavoidable questions about whether there's a parallel or two with the 60s, which maybe already says that there is a movement here, and I think there is. And anyway, for example, you could say that, I mean, Eugene is a pretty good quality of life, it's a nice place, the economy is relatively okay, so why is there this intensity, this anarchy boiling up that seems to be so radical, so total? But if you think about the 60s, the mid-60s was a very similar time, I think, in that respect. It wasn't a crisis that started in the 60s, which was confusing to Marxists because, you know, that wasn't the way it was supposed to work. Speaking of the 60s, it's kind of interesting too in passing how and this really has bugged a lot of people over the years, the 60s doesn't go away. You know, let's forget about the damn 60s. I mean, now it's 30 years ago, but yet it still sort of haunts the culture. I think that's interesting in itself. Just 10 days ago or so, there was a network TV miniseries simply called The 60s, and got the highest ratings of the year. I was reading about this. Very sympathetic, too, to the radical upheaval idea of the 60s. In fact, when you say the 60s, that's what everybody means. I was thinking about Berkeley, and there might be, I mean, Berkeley, back in the 60s, I think the movement of the 60s started in Berkeley in the fall of 64, and there wasn't really anything going on elsewhere for a while. So if this thing that's starting in Eugene isn't going on anywhere else, and I'm not too sure what's going on in other places, I'd like to think that it's already happening, but I don't know if that's true. That could be the way it goes too, that, you know, it starts somewhere, and so who knows? Who knows what's going to happen outside of Eugene or even inside Eugene, of course. I can think of a couple of differences from the 60s. For example, the women's movement. I was in Berkeley and San Francisco at the time, and it seemed that the women's movement as part of the 60s didn't come along until almost the very end, which was a handicap because it would have deepened things a lot, I think. And another thing that didn't come along until the battle, so to speak, was already decided was very much in the way of anarchist ideas or situationist ideas. So these are a couple of things that are available now. And if things really do get rolling, they'll be more available, I think. And they weren't around back then until pretty much the thing was over. There are a couple of things that might be generally supportive of the movement now. For example, there seems to be kind of real recently a consensus that the moral majority is fading out. The possibility of the right being a decisive factor, probably it never was going to be, but it's thought now that that's receding, which is probably helpful, at least in an indirect way. And in the last year, there's been more labor militancy, there's been a renewal of that, which is somewhat like the 60s. There was a period of really nothing going on in terms of energy or anger on the part of workers, and then that started in the 60s, and starting, there's some signs of that in the past year here after a long period. But on a more grisly note, things seem to be getting starker and starker. And I think here in Oregon, we used to have a tendency to think, well, we're a little bit removed from things, but just the names of places, Thurston, obviously, Coos Bay, things like that. I mean, it's real clear that there isn't any place to hide, including Oregon. And I'm not going to go into a big litany about all the horrible things that are happening, but just just checking out the paper on virtually any day you want to look at it. It's, you know, some guy murders his whole family and then shoots himself, or I think it was 2 days ago, another species is found with a lot of occurrence of deformity birds in Alaska. I think it was early this week. I can't think of the species of birds, but you know, it just goes on and on. And you wonder how much inertia and denial can withstand the graphic fact of things getting so bad. There's a brand new book I wanted to mention called Life the Movie, and I haven't read this. I've read several reviews, and a friend of mine has told me about it. But Life the Movie by Neil Gabler, and its point is that now what's kind of holding society together may be entertainment, just entertainment, because there's such a desperate need for diversion. That becomes the cardinal sort of value or virtue. And that kind of reminded me, I don't know if any of you remember the, speaking of TV again, Max Headroom, did I see that? That was kind of ahead of its time, kind of slightly futuristic, kind of weird. Anyway, I saw an episode, it reminded me of this book, Life the Movies, I understand. And this episode had to do with these terrorists who were, they had the power to shut off TV in society. And so all the politicians instantly realized that this would be just unthinkable. People would immediately go nuts and start moving to revolt right away because you have to have people stupefied by TV. And so the two kind of sound similar. A little more seriously, although that book is kind of chilling in some way too, but we're seeing a system of technology and capital that's more and more globalized and more intrusive. And it really amounts to a vast killing machine. It's killing the soul, it's killing society, it's killing the biosphere. And I think that a growing number of people are starting to think that it's time to stop endlessly compromising with it, because what have the old paths produced? What has collaboration and accommodation brought us? What is it bringing? I mean, we can go on fighting the symptoms. Symptoms keep multiplying. That seems like just a losing proposition. It's part of the denial, it seems to me. I mean, if there is a fundamental malignancy or a fundamental imbalance. So yeah, I think it's harder to escape the idea that you have to destroy that fundamental thing that's generating these problems. And I think right there already is a difference between, it introduces one of the major differences between anarchy and liberalism and leftism in terms of both tactics and the overview. And to bring out a little more on that later, I think. But here's something that's much more uplifting. It's an article from the January-February issue of Tukun magazine, which is a very mainstream magazine, a well-respected magazine. David Ehrenfeld written a piece called "The Coming Collapse of the Age of Technology." The title kind of tells you what he thinks. I mean, he's taken for granted that the whole thing, the whole ascent and order, is going to go down. And I want to read a little bit from this, just a couple of paragraphs. It's just really striking that this would appear in a magazine that's not too, not radical. He says, and this is getting to kind of the punchline of the piece here. He says, techno-economic globalization is nearing its apogee, its highest point. The system is self-destructing. There is only a short but very damaging period of expansion left. However, the present economic, technical, organizational structure of the industrial and most of the non-industrial world is the most powerful in history. Regardless of one's political orientation, it's very difficult to imagine any other system. centralized or decentralized, ever replacing it. Reinforcing this feeling is the fact that our technology-driven economic system has all the trappings of royalty and empire without the emperor. It rolls on inexorably, a giant and personal machine devouring and processing the world. Power carries with it an air of assured permanence that no warnings of history or ecology can dispel. As John Ralston Saul has written, nothing seems more permanent than a long-established government about to lose power. Nothing more invincible than a grand army on the morning of its annihilation. Wow. A grand army on the morning of its annihilation. I didn't remember that. So, but getting back to Eugene, I want to mention three sort of episodes, and I don't know how you categorize these. They're not little quote political things, but I think they're telling us something. Last fall, there was a wedding celebration in Scoburg Park. Cheryl and Tim, it was a real festive occasion. One of the last real nice days of the years I remember it. A very, very diverse crowd of people from the neighborhood, a few anarchists, a bunch of family from out of town. And after the ceremony, something really unplanned happened. Everybody just took to the streets. About 200 people had just kind of had this parade through the neighborhood, just this joyous thing. But it ended up at the police substation at 5th and Blair with a real noisy, very noisy commentary on the police. And I think what will come a little later than that, if you don't already know. And so that was kind of an odd thing. It's just, it's kind of, it's not political, but it kind of was political. Anyway, another one, about a month ago, there was a music benefit for Radio Free Cascadia, an evening of bands. And somebody wanted to have a segment called a beatbox orchestra, and where people just get up on the stage, as I understand, just make a racket and just have fun. But she was afraid that she only knew two people who were going to actually get up and do it. But it turns out that everybody was up there, and they were just screaming for revolution and just raising the rafters. It was a big surprise to her, I think. And just about a week ago, I think it was, the local arts organization Taproot had a dance performance, modern dance performance, which ended up with everybody from the audience dancing on the, up their dancing room. I don't think they expected that either, and it's another unplanned thing, something about some kind of energy in the air that I don't think it was here in the 80s or much of the 90s, and it seems like something is blowing in a different direction. What I want to do is give a brief kind of thumbnail history of some politics in Eugene, not the electoral kind of politics, to bring us up to now and a little backdrop for this intermediate Eugene thing that's unfolding. Starting in 94, and the first day of 94, by the way, was the day that the Zapatistas and Chiapas staged a rising, and they took over several towns for a little while. And 94, around here, the one significant thing that happened was the founding of Icky's Tea House over in the Whitaker neighborhood, and the late, great, embattled Icky's, which was a kind of community center for disaffected people, disenfranchised people, a kind of a haven from the dominant society, I think. And they had things like, at different times, they had a free bike repair corral, they had a free library, did videos Thursday night. It was a space where bands could play, and it lasted until the fall of 97. 95, well, entered the Unabomber, you could say, because that's when the country became fully aware of the Unabomber. The spring of 95 was the last person blown up by the Unabomber, Gilbert Murray. the Timber Association. He was the main PR person for clear-cutting the Western States and the main PR guy for other crimes against nature. And at that time, as you might not remember, Unabomber said, I'm not going to blow anyone else up, no more violence against people if you will publish my industrial society and its future. And after much hemming and hawing, the Washington Post brought that out in the fall of 95. And it seemed to me that you could see an impact of that right away. At least I think I saw that here in Eugene, the influence of that. Cop Watch was founded in the winter of 95, 96, and they've had a lot to watch, because sometime in there was the beginning, seems to me, the beginning of the militarization of police that is happening everywhere. You know, New York, there's just a lot of stories about the way, the changing way that the cops deal with things and that whole policy. And here, there was an increasing amount of systematic intimidation of people, discriminatory harassment of people. 96, well, that I think was pretty much the first year where there was a rather sustained amount of activism. Several things happened, and Ted Kaczynski was busted in the beginning, I think it was April of that year, and in May, there was a benefit at Ickes, which didn't bring them a lot of goodwill from some people in media. The local media went nuts about that. The monthly critical mass anti-car culture bike ride protest began growing in size in 96. Resist and Exist happened, which was a punk festival. A lot of people came. The police reacted massively. They told the Wild Hall they couldn't put on the shows there, and they ended up having shows out under the freeway out near Glenwood. And there was a lot of, they were freaking out about that. One very interesting thing happened that year, the Scobert Park situation, which I think is worth a mention. There was a big issue during that year. Some people who own homes right nearby, wanted it closed, wanted it all fenced off because of the dopers and the tramps and stuff like that. They didn't like that. A lot of other people thought that's not the answer to that. So there was a series of meetings where people worked really hard to work out some kind of compromise, if not consensus. And the agreement with the city, informally, I think, was that, okay, the neighborhood will work it out and then tell us what you want. Well, it was decided that some of the park would be fenced off. That didn't please everyone, but people were okay with it as a group. So what happened was, immediately the city and the cops came in, fenced it all off, which pissed off a lot of people, even the people that were more conservative, because it was just showing no respect for this process. That was an arduous process to work this out. They just fenced it all off. And well, what happened was people put banners up in the trees. They had a sleep-in or two there. And every night, they tore up all the fences. And they tore up all the fences until the cops went away. And Scobert Park is still open. I think that was possibly kind of a turning point. 97, no doubt, most well-known, I guess, for the June 1st thing downtown, where kind of on the sly, City Hall, the cops decided on a Sunday to cut down a whole lot of old trees for the parking garage that's being built there. And there was a giant outrage at all the pepper spraying, and you probably know all about this, won't go into any detail. And the fallout from that excessive police behavior is still around, I think. I want to read one thing, kind of got ahead of myself slightly. I want to illustrate something about the Whitaker mentioning Ickes as a kind of oasis. It started out, people that started that and the volunteers that ran it really tried to reach out to the cops, invited them in for coffee. They were talking to different people in the neighborhood, different merchants, trying to make it happen. And things sort of gradually worsened, unfortunately. And I want to read a paragraph from a flyer from the fall of 96. Fellow here, as quite a few of you probably know, or some of you know, Sunshine, he was kind of the main founding person of Ickes. On the evening of September 25th, this is 96, a police cruiser was closely following Sunshine and his brother Steve as they walked from a meeting of the Whitaker Community Council. This commonplace kind of harassment, among many other forms, has been increasing toward those associated with Ickes Tea House located at Blair and Third. This tailing of the two was interrupted as cops saw a young woman putting her leashed dog into her car on Blair just north of Ickes. When they falsely accused her of having the dog off its leash and demanded her ID, she responded that it was probably in a backpack at Ickes. She had said the wrong word and was promptly handcuffed and beaten. A bystander who lives nearby was similarly brutalized when he didn't get out of the reach of shoving cops quickly enough. 8 police units had arrived almost instantly with sirens blaring. And an officer named Swanson was heard to say, "Let's pick up Sunshine and beat his ass too." Officer Larry Blackwell was heard making the same statement. To a small, angry crowd that gathered, Blackwell then publicly issued an ominous threat against Sunshine, who was standing quietly across the street. Blackwell is known by many in our neighborhood for his viciously racist, illegal, life-threatening tactics. Sunshine has been repeatedly threatened publicly and privately by assorted Eugene cops, who often act with routine menace, especially against homeless, poor, and non-conformists. Well, this kind of came to a head in August of 97, critical mass bike ride, a fairly well-attended one. And Sunshine was there, and several people heard the cops who were following the thing say, "We're going to get it this time," something to that effect. I don't know if that's something right, almost exactly like that. And a motorcycle cop named Snikale drove up in front of the group, which was stopped at a stop sign and about to turn a corner, revved up his bike and plowed right through the crowd to go for Sunshine. And he could have been killed. He was knocked down and jumped on him and handcuffed him. And there was a registered guard reporter right there among another maybe 50 witnesses. And she was understandably beside herself to see this. I mean, she just saw it all. And what happened was pretty interesting about not only the police but media, how it all works. If you read the story the next day, it was completely mangled. It just consciously made such a mess of it. I remember reading it over and over again. I was there, but it didn't even make any sense. I didn't even know. From reading it, you didn't even know what happened. There was something that happened, but the editors fucked with it so you couldn't understand what happened. And not only that, but the police came down and leaned on the editors a little more, as if they needed it, since they're so hand in glove, hand in hand with each other. So anyway, Gary Webb, who was here a month or two ago, talking about, he's the one who documented and revealed the CIA's role in selling crack in LA. He said one of the main things they do with people who report things they don't want you to hear about is they undermine the credibility of the person. They spread the word, well, that person's pretty flaky, you can't trust what he or she is saying. And that's what they did with him, and that's what they did with her. And 4 months later, she wasn't at the guard anymore. Well, 98, getting closer to now, and the reason for this talk, and the reason for a lot of things right now, is I guess you would call it a campaign of property damage starting in the summer, a targeted vandalism kind of thing. And And I want to quote briefly from the flyer. And this is going on, it's been going on, I guess, although the local media didn't say anything about it until about 8 months later, until 2 weeks ago, as a matter of fact, in their great style of accuracy. Anyway, this is a good way to get a sense of where this activity is coming from, in brief. And this is part, another interesting thing. If I remember, this flyer was part of a series of, I think, four, and the public discourse really became much more interesting. I mean, somebody would post a flyer, it's happened a couple of times, and then somebody would answer it, and there was this kind of public interchange that was going on. The flyers were part of it. Anyway, this one can read just a little bit. We are 100% in favor of keeping dialogue and change open, but peaceful protest tactics become very repetitive and unproductive. We all know these things are a joke to the EPD and city officials. We recognize your choice not to commit acts of violence yourself. However, one must lack empathy and alertness not to feel anger against a system that destroys us. Acts of property damage, not human damage, against any profit-based organization are appropriate responses to the harm inflicted by business. We do not pretend to be a threat. Anarchists to any form of systematic hate and hierarchical structure are a threat. In your letter, you seem to be preaching the parable, the nail that sticks up gets smashed down. As activists, not liberals, we must support any and all forms of resistance from those that destroy, such as vandalism, to those that build, such as squatting, art, and neighborhood gardens. We cannot build on the shaky pillars of our corrupt civilization without first stepping off them and tearing them down. The real fight is a multifaceted realm of action. From informing the public and voicing our anger towards the police through posters to illegal actions in our forests and our cities, we have never asked for the help of leftists or reformists. Waiting for change to come from above through legal channels will see us to our graves. If anyone wants to look at this later, I have a memorandum from Chief of Police to the City Manager Johnson, which came out in early October, and it purports to be a long list from late July, I think it is, to the beginning of October, and I don't know how accurate it is, whether things were left out, whether things were manufactured, but it's pretty clear, if you lived in the Whitaker, what was going on, that some people weren't going to play by the rules anymore, and weren't going to play the game anymore, and this thing has been building up, and the counterattack has been building up, which is one reason, there are probably other reasons, but why the FBI is in town, and there may be somebody from the FBI here. I wouldn't be utterly surprised at that. Anyway, there were some things in 98 that were really worth mentioning. The program Weed and Seed came to the Whitaker as the poorest neighborhood. Weed and Seed means we will weed out the riffraff and we will give you seed money for a community center or whatever you want. And some urban areas have gone for this only to find that they wanted the money but they ended up with a little police state on their hands. And there were secret meetings about this, and it was discovered that they were, sort of planning to put this in effect, and the meetings became public and they were run out of the neighborhood because, I think largely because they didn't want any more police presence. Weed and Seed federalizes certain crimes and increases the penalties for certain crimes, so it's a real heavy-handed, putting it mildly, I think. Also in the summer of 98, the city announced its intention to cut down 23 beautiful old maples on Adams, which is the very heart of the Whitaker neighborhood, between 3rd and 6th. And people got together in a beautiful display of solidarity and made it very damn clear to the city that they would be fighting in the streets, if that, if they tried to do that, and those maples are still there, they're still under threat. But some people have maintained the vigilance about that, and people are well aware. And if they come in there, it's going to really be a problem, I think. Last October was the Nike riot. Probably nobody here has not heard about that. A demo at the Fifth Street Nike store, which was to protest the child labor policies and other corporate practices of Nike, kind of the standard fare. But about 15 people went into the store and more or less trashed it, and a little bit of a step forward. And two people have recently been arrested for that. On November 2nd, following that, and by the way, I think it was almost the same day as that Nike action, the Earth Liberation Front committed a $12 million arson near Vail at a ski resort, expanding to destroy even more wildlife habitat. Well, there was a SWAT team raid on the home of a 15-year-old who was allegedly at the Nike demonstration. He wasn't home, but his parents were, and a big crowd of SWAT team type people. They put the parents on the floor at that point. And they were there for 7 hours and took away a whole room full of property which has not been returned. They shut off the computer account. The mother, whose income is derived through that. And the registered guard, true to form, they had about a two-sentence thing on that, didn't say anything more, they didn't follow up, they didn't do a story, in effect. And let's see, rounding up the year in December, Officer Todd Schneider had his van vandalized for the third time in 3 months, reportedly. And the U.S. Forest Industries headquarters in Medford was burned down to the tune of $500,000. So these are a few of the things that have led up to anarchy in Eugene. At the same time, though, I think it would be a mistake, personally, to say that it is a direct result of this, to say, well, the way the cops behave, that's what you get. And that, in a certain way, that's true. But I think it's deeper than that, actually. Stan Taylor, who teaches out at Lane, I'm getting towards the end of this thing, right? Almost the end. He said to the Oregonian recently that this movement is different. And I think you can already see the difference, but I think it's simply that when people are disgusted with the system in toto and decide to act, speak out and act on that basis, then you got a difference. You got something that didn't happen before. It's happening now. Well, February 7th, there was a big spread in the Guard by Police Beat reporter Janelle Hartman. A lot of weaknesses in the thing. I just want to quote a couple of things here that are telling. One quote, police say it's not the philosophy of anarchy that troubles them. It's not knowing where anarchy ideology stops and actions start. that doesn't even require comment. And and another one, more specifically, Police Chief Hill said, when we see people showing up with hoods, meaning, in other words, masked up people in demonstrations, to me, that's an indicator that we've got problems. And you know, kind of another clueless thing to say, I guess. But you know, I mean, some people can see this who don't necessarily subscribe to all of this program, but what the cops do now is they videotape everybody at any kind of public demonstration, no matter how peaceful, for intimidation purposes and for information gathering purposes. So on that level, too, it makes sense to wear a mask. And I think that's becoming a little more understood. I just want to mention Mumia Abu-Jamal, probably in a very few weeks, he's going to get the date of his execution. And it seems to me that polite demonstrations where people say to people with masks, ruining our image, you know, what the hell are you doing with these masks, you know, and all shock and stuff. Well, it isn't going to get it done to have your old polite demonstration in terms of making a difference, I think, for Mumia, in my opinion. Okay, but I just want to say the last page of Against Civilization, I was going to hold it up, but I forgot to bring it. It's given over to just six words, which is pretty much my favorite maxim or aphorism. It kind of sums up the thrust of that book. And sums up more than that, even, I think. It says, under the pavement, it's the beach. Under the pavement, it's the beach. And so all we've got to do is tear up the pavement. That's the way I see it. And, or to use a slightly more extended metaphor, the doctor says to the patient, well, you got cancer and you're going to die if we don't get rid of that cancer. And the patient isn't likely to say, oh, I don't know about that. What would you replace it with? I mean, that's what a lot of people say. I don't know about these things, you know. So anyway, I think we do have a movement here, and I hope you all are a part of it, and I hope you all consider coming down to Aerosol for the community forum tomorrow night. Thanks a lot. Oh, tomorrow, 7 o'clock. I think it'll be open at 6. Carney? What is anarchism?
What is your version of anarchism?
I guess I'd say most generally it's an effort to figure out and fight all forms of domination and to indict the whole system of domination, the whole ensemble of domination, instead of having single issue efforts. I think another thing to say about it, I kind of wanted to say something about it here, but it just seemed like it was going to get too long, is why it seems to me that anarchy is increasingly primitivist, because we can see what's coming, and we can also see better now, I think, what the way people used to live outside of civilization. It's a way different picture. I've said this before, but I think that's a positive touchstone for people to realize that we don't need all this shit, and people lived for 2 million years without it, without organized violence, with leisure time, with gender equality, with health and elasticity. I mean, we didn't used to know this. That was not the image of, you know, benighted, precarious, brutal existence. So to me, that's a real inspiring thing. I think a lot of people are drawing something from that. This possibility, how to get there is a big question, of course, but you know, maybe we could just do without these things.
I was believed that the cop that did the deed should get the proper credit. It was Officer Snickle, Snicale, who ran Sunshine, not McHale. Stretching there.
Thanks.
He'll love me for that.
I won't send you a card. Going to avoid extinction is it has to really deepen its critique. And I just think it's to some degree holding things back. I mean, for example, I mentioned this on my radio show, probably more than once actually, in corporate dominance. There's going to be another in corporate dominance. That's a leftist thing up in Portland State in May like they had last year. Well, the people that are doing that are really stressing that they're not against corporations. They just want to control them. And it just seems like, why bother? I mean, that's just, to me, that's just a masochistic kind of thing. It's so fucking bad. Let's not play games with, well, maybe we could make them, a little better, please, and shit. I'm just tired of that. And that's what, to me, this anarchy thing, it's not just youth, but I'm just inspired by their refusal to just go down those old paths, which haven't worked, and they haven't worked, it seems to me.
You said that modern anarchists are becoming more primitive now. Do you think that has, any reaction to things like corporate acquisitions and mergers and the increasing impossibility of living an undocumented life? For example, I got a free dinner tonight, but I had to give somebody I don't know my social security number to do it. Do you think that primitivism is a reaction to things like this that are going on?
Yeah, I think it is. The left has a critique of capitalist society, and it's important. I think the other part of it, though, is there's so much going wrong on such a deep level that it suggests that there was a wrong turn taken even before industrial capitalism. There's such an emptiness and just such a palpable, it's just really bad. And it's already even, you can write about it, talk about it, but you know what I mean. What you're saying is definitely part of it.
Do you think it's more noticeable in this kind of new rebirth after the past couple of decades of relative apathy? Do you think it was more prevalent in the 60s or today? Is that
you mean in terms of primitivism? Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody was thinking about primitivism then, as far as I know. I don't think about that at all. Because partly this big paradigm shift in anthropology and archaeology, and too bad Teresa Kinson's here because she's an archaeologist and an activist here. Anyway, it's only been in the past few decades since the 60s that we now see that things were so different, so positive, almost utopian. And that's the textbook stuff now. That's what she says. That's the textbook stuff now. It isn't just some anarchist trying to cook up something to sell, some kind of agenda or something. But that's what they teach. And they ask the question, why do people give this up? There's a whole lot of stuff, but there's been a real big shift. And I don't think that was around until fairly recently. And of course, in society, it's still a great big gap. There's still the cartoons of the caveman and all that stuff, and silly stuff, but people, it takes a while for the word to get around.
There's a certain train of thought, mainly apparent in, I think, Thoreau's writing on civil disobedience and certain philosophers, that no matter what happens, and Thoreau kind of says his best when he's put in prison, and he says, really, have I lost my freedom to the government for not paying taxes? And I'm curious if you, by advocating a violent, not necessarily violent, any kind of upheaval of any type of system or any dominion, aren't you, in effect, validating their power over you? Because you're acknowledging that you are not free by fighting for your freedom.
Well, I guess you are acknowledging that, but if the whole field or the whole ground is shifting, it's become so alienated it's hard for me to imagine, since we're part of social existence. You said there's a bomb threat or, at the legal building.
Yeah, they're going to.